Hello, this is your host, Paul Harvey, at Life, Passion and Business. I realise I put this at the end of the programme most of the time, and I also realise I don't often listen to the end of podcasts. So I thought about telling you here before we get started. So the first thing is, this podcast is not supported in any way. We have no sponsorship. So if you would like to support us, do check out the Buy Me a Coffee link on this podcast app, and you'll also find it at the website. Okay, before I take you to the podcast, I want to give you a little bit of a reminder about the power of focus and accountability. This is the one tool that will really get you towards the goals you are seeking, towards the path you want to take. So listen to the end to find out more, or check out the link in the show notes. Anyway, let's get you back to the podcast. My name is Paul Harvey, and you are listening to Life, Passion and Business, a podcast born out of my desire to find greater meaning in life at the time when I thought there was none. Since that day, I have spoken to hundreds of people, and what I have discovered is that our story is everything. Because what we do, feel or experience is based on the stories that we tell ourselves. It's time to explore what it means to live a good life. How do we make this experience better? And more importantly, how do we lead the world to a better place?
So at my 40th birthday party, in front of all my friends and family, I make a big grand announcement. I say, hey, listen up, everybody. I got great news. I said, I'm gonna create, sell, and star my own television show. I'm gonna have my own TV show. And my friends were like, wow, that's amazing. What's it going to be called? And I go, oh, I don't know yet. And they're like, oh, but what channel will it be on? I go, oh, I don't know that either. And they're like, wait a minute, but what's it about? I go, oh, I don't have an idea yet. So everybody just starts laughing, taking the piss out of me, right? 9 months later, I was starring on my own television show on True TV. I did 6 seasons. It was the number one show on their network.
Do you have a big dream? Is there something in your life, an achievement or accomplishment, that is so big that it's hard even to admit that you want it? Big dreams for most people are just dreams. Few of us get to make them happen. But my guest on the show is someone who not only makes his own dreams come true, but also has a mission to open the door for others to do the same. Some of you may recognise my guest as the creator and host of Storage Hunters, a reality TV show that ran for 5 series in the US and was syndicated around the world. Sean Kelly admitted to himself and announced it to all of his friends at his 40th birthday party that he was going to create and star in the TV show of his own. His friends thought it was a joke, but his wife took him seriously, and in less than 9 months he had international success. The skill that got him that show can be traced right back to his childhood. As a young preteen, he was an illegal immigrant in Germany with his family. Rather than play with friends, he was door knocking for his father's insurance business. That experience, those sales skills, and the confidence learned at such an early age opened a life of opportunity. His parents separated when he was 16, but undaunted and still living in Europe, he worked nights and put himself through school. It was his ability to speak fluent German that led to a career in the military as a translator and ultimately deployment to Iraq during Operation Desert Storm. After leaving the military, he went back into sales, building a successful career as a magazine publisher. Now was the opportunity to start following those dreams. The first was stand-up comedy. To get more experience, he opened a comedy club and headlined it 7 days a week while holding a full-time job. At about this time, he developed a sideline as an auctioneer for non-profits, and over the last 10 years, he's raised hundreds of millions of dollars for good causes. My conversation with Sean is exceptional. It is an exploration of what is possible when we apply the principles of strategy, consistency, and no fear of rejection. Currently, Sean is developing a new TV series. His current project is Do the Big Dream, a free Facebook group that meets on a Monday evening where Sean coaches people towards those big goals. I chided him on the show about writing a book because his life would be such a good read. But in the meantime, let's join the conversation with Sean Kelly.
Hey, Paul. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. When you say, where did it all begin for me? Boy, I would say, like, I was lucky. I got I didn't realize how lucky I was at the time, but I got into sales, for example. I started doing door-to-door sales when I was 8, and I started making some real commission by the time I was 11. I was going door-to-door, getting lead cards filled out from my father. He sold life insurance to American GI stationed in Germany. And you weren't allowed to solicit in the housing area on next to the army bases. But he figured nobody would say anything to his 11-year-old son. So he would send me in, and I would knock on doors, and I'd get lead cards filled out. And for every lead card that I got filled out, I got a commission. And then for every card that turned into a life insurance policy, I got an additional commission. And I got hooked on business at a young age. So
you got very early training, didn't you?
I did. Yeah.
What kind of commission did you get?
Well, okay, back in those days, this was like 1981, my dad was paying me $1 for every lead card I got filled out. And then I would go back with him on the life insurance appointment. He would knock on their door for their appointment. He'd go, "Hey, you remember my son?" And they'd be like, "Oh yeah, yeah." Hi. And we'd walk in, and my whole job in those days was to just be quiet. And so I would sit quietly at the kitchen table while my dad would pitch life insurance to, you know, these couples. And if he sold insurance off of one of my leads, I got an additional $25 commission.
Wow. So you must have been well in at that point.
Oh yeah, I was very vested and I was very quiet. And
what was his conversion rate? Did you ever work with him?
His success rate was extremely high. Very, very high. If he could get in front of him, he could close them. His pitch was really smooth. He had this thing where he would show them how to change their state of legal residency over to a state with no income tax. And he would show them how to change their withholdings so that they wouldn't have as much federal tax withheld, and then show them how to put that money into a no-load mutual fund to earn interest. And it was a beautiful, smooth pitch. And
saving people money,
yeah,
you are well and truly on the road to having them want you in their life.
Yeah, he basically would show them how, like, he could show them how to save between $100 to $250 a month that they didn't know that they had just by using these little loopholes. And then once he freed that money up, he'd say, "Okay, you could just go waste this money and spend it if you want, or let me show you what it will do in a no-load mutual fund over the next 20 years. And let me show you what a life insurance policy that after you've paid the premiums for about 6 years, the interest in the account will make the payment for you." It was just a beautiful pitch. Even as a kid, I could appreciate it. But at the time, you know, it was like, a lot of times I probably wanted to be out like playing with my friends or whatever. But I look back and I go, nah, I'm really happy that I got all that sales training from my dad. It was really good, very helpful.
Obviously, you were young here, and yeah, this was you were kind of moving, following your father's footsteps. So obviously, you finished high school. Were you traveling with your father in his army career?
No, so he wasn't in the army. He was just a life insurance salesman. So he was a life insurance salesman who sold life insurance to American GI stationed in Germany. We weren't even legally in the country. We went there on a 90-day visa and we stayed for 10 years. So we were illegal aliens living in Germany, but the Germans really didn't care because my dad didn't work on the German economy. He wasn't taking a job away from a German because he was selling straight commission life insurance to American GIs. So we weren't part of the US military. We weren't part of the German thing. We were just kind of in this no man's land. But what was kind of interesting was my dad, he met a young lady when I was 16, and he fell in love, and he moved off to Berlin and went and lived with her. And my mom fell in love with another man and she took off. So at 16, I found myself living on my own. And so I got a job driving a forklift at night. I got my own apartment and I finished school living on my own at 16.
That must have been tough, actually. I mean, you say it all worked out for everybody, but it's still a tough transition, isn't it? Parents suddenly splitting up and going their own ways and things.
When I meet 16-year-olds today, as a matter of fact, I just did a charity fundraising auction Saturday night in Coronado, California, and I raised money for this private school. I raised around $400,000. And I met a young lady there, a friend of mine. She brought her daughter and they came and they worked as spotters for me during the auction just for fun. And I met her daughter and she was 16. And I thought to myself, wow, I was that age and I was already living on my own, you know, supporting myself and everything. And I was like, I was just a kid. But at the time, you don't think of it in those terms. But I wouldn't go back and change anything. I've had a wonderful life.
No, I was suggesting you would change it. But I'm just recognizing it was a journey. And I guess time with your father on the beat, so to earning money, I guess, gave you a lot of confidence.
It really did. It really taught me how to overcome the fear of rejection. My dad taught me some valuable lessons when I was knocking on doors. When I first started doing it, it scared the hell out of me to the point to where I remember the first day my dad came back to pick me up, I was broke, I had broken down in tears. I was crying. I was like, I don't want to do this. And my dad gave me this beautiful speech. He took me across the street to the army base and we went to the burger bar and he bought me a hamburger and a soda. And the way he went about it was very interesting, but he said to me, instead of just giving me like a straightforward speech, right? He said to me, he goes, have I ever told you about this casino where you can go and you can place bets? And if you lose the bet, you don't lose any money. But if you win the bet, they pay you money. And I go, no. I go, because that casino doesn't exist. He goes, no, it does. He goes, it's a real place. And he goes, as a matter of fact, he goes, kids are allowed to go to this casino. I go, okay, now I know you're making it up. He goes, no, this is for real. He goes, you can go there, you can place bets. And if you lose the bet, you don't lose any money. But if you win, you get paid. He goes, do you think you might want to go to this casino someday? And I go, well, yeah, of course. He goes, do you want to go now? And I go, all right, let's go. So we go back, we get in the car. He drives me back across the street to the housing area. And he goes, okay, get out. I go, what? I go, this isn't the casino. My dad goes, no, son. This is the casino. He goes, every time you go in there and you knock on a door, you're placing a bet that you're going to try to get them to fill out this card. And he goes, and if you don't win the bet, he goes, you don't lose any money. He goes, but if you win the bet, he goes, you win some money. And he goes, and here's the beautiful thing. You get to increase your odds of winning because the better you get at what you say to these people and convincing them, you increase your odds of winning the bet. And so I go, oh, so it is kind of like a casino. He goes, yeah, it's a casino. So I go in, I start doing it. That very first day, he came back to pick me up a couple hours later. And this time he goes, how did you do in the casino? And I said, Dad, I won 27 bets. And I handed him 27 lead cards and he was blown away. And it was really cool because it made me think about rejection. It made me think like, you know, it's not rejection. It's placing bets. And sometimes you're going to win and sometimes you're going to lose. And then later in life, what I learned was it turns out that the fear of rejection is hardwired in our brains in the same place where we feel physical pain. And it's been that way all through evolution, because at some point in history, if you did something really dumb to piss everybody off in the village, they were going to kick you out and you're not going to survive on your own. So Mother Nature knew she had to hardwire that thing somewhere. Well, what my dad learned, and he didn't probably know any of this, but there's another part of our brain, the reward system, where you get like endorphins. And it turns out that when you learn something new and you have a challenge and a goal, it releases endorphins. So if you treat each one of these instead of rejection, but as an opportunity to learn and to get better, you're going to actually have the endorphins released in your brain. It's going to feel good. So I went from having a fear of rejection to not viewing it as rejection, viewing it as just gambling, placing a bet, and each time I learned something new. So that was a beautiful thing that I carried forward for the rest of my life.
Wow. What a lovely story. Thank you for that. Yeah. So when you, obviously you were 16, you put yourself through school and college. Was this back in the US or did you do it in Germany?
No, in Germany.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you speak good German then? You speak fluent German?
Yeah, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Genau. Nice. Yeah. I spreche ein wenig. But it's a long time since I've spoken any German. So I wouldn't. Fascinating. So obviously, did you do school in Germany?
Yeah. So I went from German school from my first year was fifth grade. I had to repeat the fifth grade twice because my parents just threw me in and we came from America. They put me right into German school. I didn't speak a word of German at the time. Mm-hmm. So they just enrolled me. And that first year, I really was just trying to learn the language. So the school made me repeat the fifth grade. And then, so I did the fifth grade twice. I did sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth. At the end of ninth grade, I switched over to the American school in Germany. And I went to a Hanau American High School. And I went there for three semesters. And that's where I got my high school diploma while I was living on my own. Yeah, isn't that wild?
Did you go to college in the end?
No, I ended up moving. Once I graduated, I moved down to Vicenza, Italy, and I got a job on a U.S. Army base as an undercover store detective catching shoplifters. And I did that for about a year. Then I met this guy who was an Army recruiter, and he goes, wait a minute. He goes, let me get this straight. You're born in America. You're a U.S. citizen. You speak fluent German. And he goes, and you have no criminal record? And I go, nope, no criminal record. He goes, you can work for military intelligence, get a top secret clearance. We could give you all this money for college and all of this. And he goes, and we could put you into the Army as a sergeant, an E5, straight away. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah. So I did. I went into the Army, and I ended up working for military intelligence. And I ended up going over to Iraq, and I served in Desert Storm in combat.
That's an amazing story. So you were in Desert Storm. Gosh, that must have been a journey as well.
Yeah, it really was. It was, you know, I went into the Army as a German translator for military intelligence, thinking that I would just be stationed back in Germany where I grew up, and I would have a cush job just at working as a translator. And as soon as I got to Germany in July of 1990, after going through all my Army training, and in August, Kuwait got invaded. Mm. And by September, I was on the ground in Saudi Arabia and gearing up and getting ready to go into Iraq. So
your German translation, your German translation couldn't have been that much use out in an Arabic country.
No. It was no use, but what they used our unit for was we didn't have enough Arabic linguists. We'd been preparing for during the Cold War, we'd been preparing for war with Russia and the Eastern Bloc countries. So we just didn't have, at that time in history, we just didn't have Arabic linguists, enough of them. So what OPEC did was they pulled all the scholarships of the Kuwaiti kids that were in university in the United States on an OPEC scholarship, and pulled them all from university and made them go to 2 weeks basic training and join the U.S. Army. And they assigned them all to our unit as our translators. So I got assigned a Kuwaiti kid who was like 19 years old at the time, and he was my translator.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Interesting journey. How long did you stay in the military for?
I was in for 4 years, and then after the end of my first enlistment, I decided to get out, and then I pursued a career in sales after that, because it just seemed like a natural thing to do after growing up the way I'd grown up in Germany, doing all those sales with my dad.
And I guess the good thing about that in some ways is that you hadn't, although 4 years in the military, still 4 years, you hadn't been completely indoctrinated into the military style. Because what I do notice by people I've spoken to, coming out of the military back into civvy street, for people who've been in a long time, it's really hard to adjust to the fact in the military, where you say, do this, it gets done. In civvy street, you say, do this, they go, really?
Yeah. No, you're not kidding. It was actually I think because my 4 years were very intense.
Oh, yeah.
Intense training program because of what I was doing as a translator, a very intense combat tour, you know. I was a young man at the time. I was, 20 years old when I was in combat. That's very impactful on you. So I think like coming back out of the military was not an easy transition for me either. But I did get into sales right away, and I started working for a British company, actually, in the United States, United News and Media out of the UK. It's the largest newspaper and magazine company in the world. Mm-hmm. And I went to work for them, and I started launching magazines in the US. I would go in and I would like search out the new city and hire the teams and train them and get the magazine up and running. And then once we were publishing, then I would go to the next city and start another magazine. And that's how initially I got rocking and rolling in kind of business.
So obviously, this is called life, passion, and business for the obvious reason that we want to know what's driving you. So what was driving you throughout this time? I mean, clearly, you've got a passion and enjoyment of the sales journey. You enjoy that thrill of the chase on that some level. Is that what that is? Or am I just putting words in your mouth?
No, I would say that I think like getting out of the military, not knowing what I wanted to do, but knowing that I had sales skills and that I could fall back on that, I just gravitated to it, right? But and like everyone, when you're young and you don't have any money, you're motivated at first, like, hey, I got to get out here and hustle and make some money. I got married at a very young age. I got married at the age of 21. My wife and I are still married. I'll be 54 this summer. We've been married for nearly 32 years, and it's been a wonderful journey. But thank you. But when you get married that young, it's like all of a sudden you have to sober up and go, okay, I got to get out and make some money.
Well, the other thing about when you get married that young is you're both kids, really. So there's a lot of changing going on in those years. So it's quite amazing that people stay together for that length of time. Because you're not really fully formed adult until you're 25, really.
Yeah, or maybe even later. It's like, it's amazing, like from who we were back then to who we are now, and it's but we've been able to grow and change together, which has been great.
Mm.
But I would say that, like, okay, so I had a very extensive, long experience working in sales and marketing and advertising and running many different magazines and newspapers over the early part of my career. But when I finally at one point admitted to myself that I had some secret desires that I'd always wanted to do. And at one point I gave myself permission to go do it. The first thing that was is I had always, since I was a kid, wanted to do stand-up comedy. And I had loved Robin Williams as a kid and these different comedians. So at the age of 28, while I was managing a newspaper in San Diego, here I was managing the fifth largest newspaper in the United States. I had 111 salespeople that worked for me. And at night, secretly, I went out and I started doing stand-up comedy. I quickly realized that I was horrible at it, but I loved it. So I needed my own place to be able to practice. So then I ended up opening up my own comedy club where I performed 7 shows a week, every week for 8 years. And I made myself the headliner of every show. So I did 1 show on Thursday night, 3 shows on Friday nights, 3 shows on Saturday nights. And I did that every week.
You've got no fear whatsoever, have you? I mean, you're throwing yourself
into
it. Comedy is literally combat without guns.
It is a verbal sparring.
It literally is combat without guns or without physicality. And yet, depends on the club you go to, I guess. But the mere fact that you could do that and just set yourself up for that is just amazing.
Yeah, I got good at it. So I loved it. So I ended up doing that probably like around, by the time I got that club open, I was probably about 32. And so I did it for about 8 years. I did it every week for 8 years, 7 shows a week for 8 years. I was still managing the newspaper during the day. And then right before my 40th birthday, this is when the craziest, then I realized, okay, the real motivation behind wanting to do all of this, the real thing that I was so afraid to admit to myself because it just seemed so crazy and outrageous, was that ever since I was a kid, I had always wanted to star in my own television show. So here I was about to turn 40 years old. I'd never been on an audition. I had never even acted in a play. I didn't have an agent, a manager, no contacts, nothing. I just had this dream, and I admitted it to myself. I said, okay, I want this. I want my own television show. So this was 3 days before my 40th birthday. So at my 40th birthday party, in front of all my friends and family, I make a big grand announcement. I say, hey, listen up, everybody. I got great news. I said, I'm gonna create, sell, and star my own television show. I'm going to have my own TV show. And my friends were like, wow, that's amazing. What's it going to be called? And I go, oh, I don't know yet. And they're like, oh, but what channel will it be on? I go, oh, I don't know that either. And they're like, wait a minute, but what's it about? I go, oh, I don't have an idea yet. So everybody just starts laughing, taking the piss out of me, right? Except for my wife. My wife goes, hey, if it's a TV show you want, I've seen you accomplish a lot of stuff. I think you're going to do it.
Well, the point is, you had the talk when you were 8 or 9 about lottery. You know about this lottery process, this route, this casino. And it's no different, is it? It's exactly the same conversation.
No matter what you want to accomplish, it's no different. So here's what ended up happening. So at my 40th birthday, this was in June, everyone's laughing at me like, yeah, right. Okay, buddy, good luck with that. 9 months later, I was starring on my own television show on True TV. I did 6 seasons. It was the number one show on their network. The opening night, the premiere of the show had the highest ratings in the history of the entire network. I did 6 seasons. It started airing worldwide. It became a hit. It started airing in 127 countries, became a huge hit in the UK, started airing on Freeview in the UK on a channel called Dave. And it became such a big show that when I found out that it was a hit there, In 2013, I flew to MIPCOM, where they buy and sell television formats in France, in Cannes, at the Cannes, where they do the Cannes Film Festival. I met with the parent company of Dave called UK TV, struck a deal with them. I moved to the UK, and my wife and I did six more seasons on Dave. We did Storage Hunters UK, and then we created Celebrity Storage Hunters, where over 130 British celebrities came on my show, bid on storage units, and used their profits to give to their favorite charity. And so for 12 seasons and for many years of my life, I lived out my dream with my own television show.
And just a little bit, because this could go down a real rabbit hole. How did you pitch that from nothing to something in 9 months?
Oh, okay. This is a beautiful story. I'm so glad you asked. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for asking that. Okay, listen. So here it is on my birthday. It's a Thursday night. I can remember clearly when my Thursday night. Hell, all my friends and family, gigantic laughs, right? Saturday night, I was doing charity fundraising auctions. I had learned how to become an auctioneer, but the only kind of auctions I was doing was raising money for nonprofits. So I was doing one for the American Cancer Society in La Jolla, California. And after my auction, this guy walks up to me, and it was a guy that I knew. He was one of my clients from the newspaper. He owned a self-storage facility called Big Box. His name was Brian. Brian walks up to me, goes, Sean, he goes, hey, man. He goes, I knew you were doing stand-up comedy. He goes, but I didn't know you were an auctioneer. And I go, yeah, I've been doing auctions for a little while. He goes, you're good. He goes, you should come do my storage auction. I go, what's that? What's a storage auction? Because there were no TV shows, right? I go, what's a storage auction? He goes, well, people don't pay their storage bills. He goes, we get to auction off all their contents to get the stuff out of it so we can re-rent the units. I go, wow, when's your next auction? He goes, Tuesday. I go, what time? He goes, starts at 7 a.m. I go, I'll be there. So Tuesday, I go to the auction. I'm watching this auction. There's only like 23, 24 guys there. The auctioneer has no energy. He's like raising like $25, $30 per unit. And they're getting thousands of dollars worth of free stuff, you know, stuff out of these units. And they're paying like $25, $30, right? And I'm like, this is my TV show. I'll be that auctioneer. I'll bring a bigger crowd. I'll make fun of people. I'll give them nicknames. I'll joke around. this is it. This is my show. So I go in the office, I convince them to let me do their next auction. And then I said, where do these guys sell this stuff? And they go, oh, they all sell them at the swap meets, which are like in the UK car boot sales, right? So for the next 4 or 5 weekends, my wife and I, we got clipboards and paper, and we went to every single car boot sale, every swap meet. And we got guys to give us their phone numbers, their email addresses to sign up on my list for my first auction. So three months later was the next auction. I promoted the hell out of this thing. And where the last auctioneer had about 23 people there, I got 800 people to show up. I had a cameraman there. It was a madhouse. Anyway, we filmed this thing. And a week later, I get an edited reel about 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes long. And I watch it from my editor. And it's just, oh, I just go, this is it. This is my show. So I call my boss at the newspaper and I said, hey, I'm going to take a few vacation days. He goes, all right, no problem. I Google every television network, their phone numbers, and I start cold calling them. And they all go, who are you? No, we don't take unsolicited ideas. Click, 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 click. Every network in America hangs up on me. But as I'm listening, I'm asking questions for anyone who will stay on the phone with me for more than a second. And I start writing down little things that I'm hearing. So I hear this one lady go, no, our development department doesn't take unsolicited ideas. I go, oh, development department. That's who I got to talk to. So then I went to the beginning of my list and I started with the biggest network, NBC. And I go, yes, development, please. And they go, Mass, who's calling? And I go, just let them know it's Sean. Okay. So then I get through to the gatekeeper. The gatekeeper goes, yeah, Mass, who's calling? I go, yeah, please let them know it's Sean. And well, what's this in regards to, Sean? In regards to the show, they'll know. Oh, okay. Boom. I'm through to the lady, head of development, NBC, biggest network in America. So I start to picture my idea and she goes, wait a minute. I don't know you do. And I go, no, we don't know each other. I go, but this is your next big hit. She goes, no. We're not legally allowed to take unsolicited ideas. She goes, we can get in so much trouble. She goes, but I love your enthusiasm. And she goes, you probably have a good idea. So she goes, you need an agent. Your agent will book in a meeting and then we can talk. I go, oh, agent. I go, where do I find one of those? She goes, wow, you really don't know anything. She goes, WME, CAA. She lists up all these agencies. So I cold call all the agencies. They all say no. I learn a few key terms. I get myself to an assistant. She says, my boyfriend is just pitching direct. You're saying doing the same thing, pitching to production companies. I go, oh, what are those? She goes, production companies are the ones that make the TV shows for the networks. I go, oh, where are they located? She goes, they're mostly in Santa Monica. So I start cold calling all those. Long story short, every network in America says no twice. Every agency in America tells me to go fly a kite. All the production companies, I couldn't get through to any decision makers except for one who said it was a dumb idea. Nobody would watch it. So I take my reel. I buy a domain name from GoDaddy for $9 or $11 or something for a year. I put my little 3 minute, 3.5 minute reel on there. I type really big, here's your next hit TV show and my telephone number. I buy Google AdWords. I targeted them towards Santa Monica where all the production companies are. And I bought 80 different search phrases and words that I thought someone looking for a new show idea might type into Google. I put my per click at $50, which is massively high.
Yes,
but I high. Just thought, I thought this is such a rare niche. I got no clicks for the first 3 weeks. Week three, one click, one phone call. This guy calls me up and he goes, hey, is this Sean Kelly? And I go, yeah. He goes, I just watched your reel. I think it might make for a great TV show. I go, that's why I made it. He goes, listen. He goes, we're a motion graphics company. He goes, we don't actually make TV shows. But the owner of our company was at the dog park yesterday morning and ran into a woman who owns a production company who gave us an open door policy to come pitch ideas. And we want to pitch your idea. I said, great, let's meet up. We met up. We did a deal. We went, pitched her. She loved it. Did a deal with her. Next thing you know, we're pitching networks. And 9 months later, I'm starring on TV.
That was a lovely segue. Thank you so much for that. I mean, it's testament to though to that early story. This is the same, you know, 9-year-old kid knocking on doors,
yes,
and listening to the words and getting better at it.
And getting better at it, and that's one of the key secrets to life. Is like don't have fear of rejection. Don't look at it as rejection. It's a learning opportunity. And I had another incredibly valuable lesson that I learned though when I was 15, about a year before my parents took off. I used to be a really good skier, and I was on a ski team in Germany, and I would race giant slalom and slalom. And I was on a ski trip to Switzerland, and I was 15 years old. It was 1985, and I wasn't there with my ski team. I was actually there with my church youth group, and all the other kids weren't skiers and they were all taking lessons. And I was off skiing the black runs by myself, headphones on, skiing down. And I had my headphones on and I'm racing down this black diamond, you know, in Switzerland, you know, like a bat out of hell down this mountain. And all of a sudden I get to the bottom of the hill and I hear someone yelling at me. So I take my headphones off and this guy skis up to me and he goes, hey, hey, hey. He goes, hey, what's your name? And I go, Sean. And I go, is there something wrong? He goes, no. He goes, let me ask you. He goes, hey man. He goes, are you here for the Laberhorn? And I go, the Laberhorn? I go, no, I don't even know what the Laberhorn is. I'm here with my church youth group. He goes, your youth group? And I go, yeah. He goes, where do you live? I go, I live in Germany. He goes, but you sound American. I go, I am American. It's a long story. Mm. He goes, oh. He goes, okay. I thought maybe you're here for the Laberhorn. He goes, you know what? He goes, how old are you? And I go, I'm 15. He goes, oh. He goes, you should race. I go, oh, I do race. He goes, oh, you race? He goes, how many races have you won? I go, I've never won a race. I go, I'm kind of like the kid on the race team that's been, you know, kind of the charity case. I got sponsored. I've got like rental skis and rental boots. And the other kids have got like latest state-of-the-art skis and aerodynamic ski suits. And I've got an oversized jacket. I go, but I just love being on the team, but I've never won. He goes, hey, listen. He goes, stop talking. I go, what? He goes, just stop talking. He goes, get on the chairlift with me. So we get on the chairlift. We're going up the mountain. He goes, hey, he goes, kid, have you ever heard of Billy the Kid? I go, the cowboy? He goes, no. He goes, let me ask you something. He goes, did you watch the Winter Olympics in Sarajevo, Yugoslavia last year? And I go, yeah. I go, an American won the gold medal for the first time in the downhill. He goes, yes, he did. He goes, that the gold medalist, Bill Johnson. I go, yes, Bill Johnson, he won. I go, yeah. He goes, I am Bill Johnson, also known as Billy the Kid. I go, oh my God, you are Bill Johnson. You won a gold medal. He goes, yes. And he goes, and kid, do you want to know why I skied up to you? He goes, I don't need any more friends. He goes, I saw you come down that mountain so fast and so fearless. He goes, I thought I was going to have to race you in the Labrador, the World Cup tomorrow. And he goes, and I wanted to come size you up and get in your head and freak you out a little bit. I go, really? He goes, yes. He goes, here's what I, he goes, listen to my words carefully. He goes, I want you to stop making excuses why you can't win. And he goes, and what I need you to do is to sell yourself on all the reasons why you are going to win and why you can't lose and why you have nothing to lose. He goes, because here's the secret, kid. What you sell yourself on is what you will buy. What you buy is what you will project to the world. And what you project to the world, they will buy about you. He goes, so if you sell yourself that you're a winner and you project that, other people will believe you're a winner too. And I go, wow, that's pretty cool. And it was a sales analogy, which really resonated with me. And 3 months later in Garmisch, Germany, I won 2 gold medals, 1 in giant slalom and 1 in slalom, just using that mental lesson that he taught me. So that's another thing your listeners can take with them, because
you are a high achiever, Sean.
Yeah. Well, I think what it is, what I learned, when you learn the secret to sales, if you learn selling and sales, you realize, well, you could sell any product or service, whatever. But the most important sales call you're ever going to go on is the very first one, which is to yourself. You got to sell yourself. And if you sell yourself and you really believe it, then like sky's the limit.
Absolutely. Wow. So where are you today? Because obviously you've done so much, you know, what with TV shows and traveling around sports. I mean, there are no limits to your adventures, by the sounds of it. How do you, do you limit yourself anyway?
No, I'm open to so many different things. I'll tell you what I'm working on and doing right now. I'm out raising money for nonprofits, doing charity fundraising auctions.
Yep.
Last Saturday, I was in Coronado, California. I raised $400,000 for a school. The weekend before that, I raised about $500,000 for another school. The weekend before that, I was in Riverside, California. I raised $825,000 for another school.
What are they selling to raise that kind of money?
Oh, they're selling these really once in a lifetime kind of unique experiences and trips and vacations and that kind of stuff. And then a good chunk of the money, we do what we call a paddle raise, where we just give them like, this is what we're going to do with the money. We're going to build this classroom, or we're going to make this or do that. And I just get straight donations by asking who wants to give 100,000, who wants to give 50,000, and just work my way down. But so I'm doing a lot of charity fundraising auctions. I've got a Facebook group, a private Facebook group that anyone can join for free. And I go in there on Monday nights and I do 1 hour live where I just basically tell people my formula, my 3-pillar skills, and my 15-step formula to accomplish any dream. The Facebook group is, you go to facebook.com/groups/dothebigdream, or you can go to my website, dothebigdream.com. And when you go in there, you can click on the Facebook group. And I go in there each Monday and I spend an hour with everybody and I teach people. I have 3-pillar skills: how to have authentic self-confidence, how to overcome the fear of rejection, and how to sell. Those are the 3 cores. And then I teach them a 15-step formula to achieve any dream that they want to go after. And this is the formula that I've used. I didn't realize I was using it initially, but once I accomplished a bunch of things, I was like, what is it that I do first? And then what I do second? And I realized, wait a second, I'm like following the same formula every time. So I'm teaching people that formula. They can join me for free. What I'm trying to get out of it is to see how many people I can encourage to help achieve their big giant dreams. So far I helped a young man right out of college who wanted to become an actor and a comedian, and he's gone on to be very famous. He's done about 11 movies now, 4 television shows. He recently sold a movie script to Steven Spielberg, and he gave a talk at Google where they interviewed him when he first wrote his book. They said, hey, in your book, you reference the Godfather, Sean Kelly. Who's Sean Kelly? And he's like, oh, Sean Kelly, he was my mentor. The actor's name is Jimmy O Yang, and he's in the US. He's become a very popular young star on the rise. So I was his mentor. So I had such a great joy helping Jimmy achieve all of that, that I thought, hey, how many more people can I help? So that's kind of what I've been up to. I've been doing charity auctions.
Did you leave the publishing industry? Are you now completely out of that?
Oh yeah, I haven't done anything in publishing. I left the publishing industry in, boy, I think it was 2009.
Yeah.
And that's when I went into television.
Yes.
And I literally went from working at the newspaper, selling as the sales manager, you know, the business development manager, to all of a sudden starring on my own TV show. But you could imagine everyone I used to work with, they were like, what? What just happened?
Yes. It was a comedy club as well. It was just an amazing journey.
Yeah. And I was running that comedy club too at night. That was, yeah. So, you know, all these things, you can achieve amazing, awesome things in life, but you got to be prepared to work hard, you know?
Yeah, well, you got to be prepared to do the hours, haven't you? You've got to do something. You've got to learn the craft. That's what you've got to do. And that's how you did the charity auction stuff, because you learned the craft. And as I said, stand-up comedy is combat without guns. So you were already taught yourself how to do that sort of stuff. I mean, lovely, lovely journey. So let me get on to some of my questions that I ask everybody. How do you define success for yourself? What does success mean to you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think you redefine success as you get older and as you become more successful. I used to think that success was, you could attach it to a dollar figure, you know, to earnings. And then I've come to realize, I believe success is when you can feel like you're living your life's purpose. And part of the hard part is, one, figuring out what that life's purpose is, and then believing that you can actually live that purpose, and then going out and having the guts to live the purpose and struggle with it and learn. And sometimes that requires you to maybe start all over into something brand new. But if you can live a life of purpose and passion, whether the money comes or not, I think you're winning. I think you're successful. I've met many, many people who are, if you were to look at their bank accounts, you would say they are incredibly successful, but they got that money working and doing something that they weren't necessarily passionate about. They just happened to have a good idea at the right time. And that money's wonderful because you can go off and do a lot of things with it. But I know plenty of people who maybe don't have the fattest bank accounts, but are just really happy because they have found their passion. So I would say that life's passion and purpose is number one in my life now. And that's why I'm doing all these things that I'm passionate about.
There's no doubt about it. From the conversations I've had, you know, there's no doubt. Money is good. Money's good. Money's important. There's no doubt about it. We have to acquire assets throughout our life to have a comfortable life and be okay. So that's true. But that's the Maslow's hierarchy thing, isn't it? The different pillars of the Maslow's hierarchy.
That's right.
But there's also money and miserable is also very common. You know, if you were a miserable ass before you got money, you're going to be a miserable ass after you've got money. You've got to change You've got to change that thing, really.
You know, I learned that lesson early on my wife actually taught me that lesson. Because I came from, you know, my father worked, you know, selling life insurance. So it was feast or famine. If he had commission checks, we were doing great. And if he didn't, things weren't going well. You know, utilities were getting shut off and things were getting repossessed. So that was kind of like my childhood. So I had always aspired to acquire a lot of money because I equated that to safety and security and to happiness. And my wife, on the other hand, she grew up in Beverly Hills and she grew up around a lot of people with money. And she also worked as the personal assistant to a famous American comedian by the name of Joan Rivers. And she had been with Joan for probably about 6 years. And so she got working as Joan's personal assistant, she got to know Joan very well, and she got to know many of Joan's celebrity friends. And Lori told me that some of the most unhappy people that she'd ever met were some of these celebrities that were extremely wealthy, had wonderful lifestyles, but just were not happy people inside. And so she said, you know, just be aware that money's not going to bring you happiness. You know, money's going to bring you a sense of security, and it's going to open more doors for you, and it's going to allow you to go pursue more of your passions, and it's going to allow you to travel, and it's going to allow you to do things for people you love, and it's going to allow you to, you know, not have to worry about where you're paying for your next meal, but it's not going to bring you happiness. And she goes, and I've seen it time and time again, and she's right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the things that this podcast has really brought out for me very much, very clearly. You need to have an answer to this success question. You need to define what success means to you. And when you have that answer, then life, you know, work doesn't seem to work anymore. It becomes a joy to express it. And
that's right.
Yeah. So contribution. Clearly, you contribute to the world. How do you feel you contribute to the world?
Well, I feel like I've made a much larger contribution than I ever thought I would when I was a young man, because I can remember at 16 when I got, kind of abandoned as an illegal alien living in Germany and just trying to survive. I didn't know how I was going to make it. And now I look back at my life and I have raised over $500 million collectively for nonprofits, for everything from children's hospitals to schools to nonprofits. I made that television show for 12 seasons. I used to go to Comic Cons all across the UK and I would meet with fans, and I had numerous people come up to me and they'd say, "Hey, you know, when my nan was sick, she would binge watch your show and it brought her lots of joy." Or when my son has autism and he loves things that have repeating things that repeat. And he goes, "And your show is very repetitive in its nature, the way it is. And my son loves your show and it brings him a lot of joy." Or my uncle was, sick with cancer and he was bed stricken and he got to watch your show and it just made him, so happy, and he's recovered now. "Will you make a video for him? Can I turn my phone on? Will you say hi to my uncle?" You know, like just hearing all those different stories, you realize, wow, you don't realize what a ripple effect you can have throughout the world. And I know that all these different nonprofits I've raised money for, so many of them are such great stewards of the money and have done incredible things for sick children and for just, veterans causes. I've raised in 2017, I did a stand-up comedy tour across the UK. I did 122 theaters. I did 50 shows at the Fringe Festival. And then we went out across the UK and we did all the little council theaters and sometimes it was big theaters, but we did 122 theaters. And I gave all my profits to Help for Heroes in the UK to help other disabled vets, because I'm a disabled combat vet. My wife is a combat veteran as well. And so we have a real passion for veterans' causes. And so we took all the profits from our tour and we turned around and we gave it all to Help for Heroes.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that, like, everyone has the ability to reach beyond themselves. And the truth of the matter is that the greatest rewards in life is when you're able to do things for others, and it will come back to you. You won't necessarily know how or where or when or why, but it will. And it always does.
How do you contribute to yourself?
I love to, that's a really good question, because I feel like self-care is incredibly important.
Mm. It's easy to give and give and give, isn't it? And some people overgive, and then they wonder why they are struggling afterwards.
Yeah, and I've been guilty of that myself. I would say that one, I try to look after my mental health. I think it's extremely important. You know, as a combat vet, you just naturally kind of struggle with that, especially as time goes by. So I try to look after that. I try to look after the way I eat and, my diet, and I try to get exercise. I could be doing a much better job on that front. But the other ways that I look after myself is just to make sure that I have my affairs always in order so that there's nothing weighing on me. And I think that's pretty much how I've looked after myself.
Hmm. Nice. Yeah, absolutely. Self-care is very important in life, very important. Mm. And although we're here to work and do things, we're not really here to work. We're here to live our own life for ourselves. So doing things for ourselves is actually quite important.
Yeah, here's what I find, and this may work for your listeners, it may not, depending on what kind of business they are, if they're entrepreneurs or whatever. But I work very hard 6 months of the year, and I take it very easy 6 months of the year. So what I do is I work usually June, July, and August, those 3 months, nobody really wants to do any fundraising auctions. There's not a lot going on. So my wife and I usually travel. So last year, we spent June, July, August, we split our time between Germany and Austria, and mostly in Vienna. And then we would just go out, go for long walks, go to the parks, go look at the architecture, go to museums, that kind of stuff. Then September, October, November, and the first weekend of December, those 3 months, every single Saturday, doing an auction, just working full blast. Then December, January, February, those 3 months, just kind of taking it easy here where I live in Arizona because the winters are wonderful here. Maybe do some writing, maybe work on, you know, some of my stuff that I'm doing for the coaching and stuff, but really low key. And then March, April, May, it ramps right back up and it's every single Saturday and it's full on. So that's kind of how I, you know, do my self-care, which
you've got
is
a,
like,
you've got a cycle then, you a cycle.
Work hard, play hard. Yeah.
Huh. This is the point though for me. This is the journey of this podcast. Everyone finds their own path. That's the point.
Yeah.
There's no one path. There is my path, your path. I mean, your path will be different. So here's our last main question here, which is kind of the big one really, because what is the meaning of it all? Why do you do this?
Oh yeah, well that's a pretty deep question. Like, what is the meaning of it all? And I'm sure many of us have sat down and you know, at different points in my life, I've done a lot of self-reflection, and I thought to myself, like when I was doing stand-up comedy and I was out there doing these hell gigs trying to get good as a comedian, there were many nights where I'm like, what in the world am I doing? I got to be at work in the morning. I'm running a newspaper. I got my wife's at home waiting for me to come home. I'm out telling jokes to a bunch of drunks. What the hell am I doing? Right. And I didn't know at the time what the magnetic pull was. And I couldn't, if you'd asked me then, I couldn't have given you a clear answer. Now, in hindsight, I go, well, of course, those 20 years doing stand-up comedy and building those stage skills have allowed me to go on to become an incredible auctioneer, raising money for all these nonprofits and impacting the world in a huge way. But had I not invested all those years and that time in that, it's everything becomes clear in hindsight in 2020. So what's catapulting me forward is just the joy of everything that I'm doing right now. I'm living my best life and I'm having fun because I've mastered certain skills, and it's just a joy to do now. And I would do a lot of these things whether I got paid or not. I just recently shot a brand new idea for a whole new television show that I'm getting ready to go out and pitch that I haven't told anyone about. So I might be having round four of the television, you know? And yeah, just because I had so much fun making TV. Like, it's one of these things where I'm like, gosh, every day was a joy to show up to work. And it was just such a good time.
Yeah.
So I think that time you'll be able to go back and you'll be able to look back and go, oh, well, wait a minute. Had this not happened, then that wouldn't have happened. And I wouldn't, you know,
oh, yeah.
you could piece things together.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone with a time machine was about and just knock something out, and, you know, the whole life would be different, wouldn't it? There's always
whole new trajectory.
There's little anchor points. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, there's a situation, a leaflet I found in a library when I was 27, 26, I think it was. And from that leaflet, my whole life changed. It was to be acting in a play. And from that process, I did various other bits and pieces. And that's where I met my wife. So you could literally take that leaflet out and burn it, and I would not be sitting here.
Oh, yeah. It is crazy how these things lead to certain things. I have a interesting story how I met my wife as well. And I realized, oh my goodness, the stars really had to align for all that to happen. I will say this, you know, you going and taking, was it an acting class that you took?
I was in an amateur production, and that's where I found the leaflet, and it took me into an amateur production, and so I really thoroughly enjoyed the process, but I realized that I needed to learn more, so I then went into an I went in to do acting classes basically. So
well and, I would just tell your listeners, I think the best thing they could do for themselves is to go out and either take an acting class, like a stand-up comedy class, get some public speaking experience, you know, get on stage and speak to large groups and get over that fear and conquer that, because that will, that more than anything else, will really help catapult your business career, your entrepreneurship forward. Because if you can get up on a Friday night and tell jokes in front of 1,000 people, Monday morning when you're sitting across from a CEO that you're trying to pitch on your product or service, it's nothing. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's that thing about communications. You know, I remember talking to a networking guy years ago, and he said, it's all about comms, mate. Everything's about comms.
Yes. That's a good way of, it's all about comms.
You know, it's like, it is. And yeah, I did Toastmasters for a few years. So it's, that's
So you know, what's interesting, Paul, is I've been recommending for people, oh, go to Toastmasters, but I had never been. I went to my first meeting last night. Even after all these years of doing professional speaking, I thought, well, if I'm going to recommend this, I should go actually see what the format is. So I went to my very first meeting last night just to observe. So it's funny you brought that up.
What is so lovely about Toastmasters? It's such a supportive environment where everything is reviewed. And that's why I always like it. And it's reviewed in such a gentle, beautiful way.
Well,
certainly in the UK, it's not harsh in terms of the review.
Yeah.
So it's like, what could you have done? What worked? What could you have done better? And that's all it about every time, everything from timekeeper to all the different roles. And someone who can't do anything can take a role which is so factual, like the time. Did we all make the time tonight? Did we all speak on time?
Yeah.
They can deliver that factual role as a speech. At the end of it, yes, John did this, James did this, and that is the time. They can do that. And, you know, it's about getting up and standing up in front of people and speaking about facts. They don't have to think about anything. So it's beautiful in that it sets up these roles for people to explore how to present.
It's exactly what you need when you first start out, when you have no experience. And then later, you know, when you're ready to progress, you know, it's always good to get a coach. Like I coached a guy who had been doing stand-up comedy for a long time, but he wanted to try to build a brand new one-hour act. And he wanted to film a comedy special. And I led him through that process. And we worked together every week for a year and a half. And in the end, he got his comedy special filmed and it got millions of views. And it was, it's an interesting process. So, and I've worked with people that have done TED Talks and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I love the idea that you can have a starting point like Toastmasters, and then if it ends up resonating with you, then you say, oh, I want to pursue this further, that there's so many other directions you can go in. So it's great.
I mean, I saw some amazing journeys at Toastmasters. I have a friend now, I haven't seen her for quite a while, but who has long hair, and she got up to do her first speech and she just dropped her head. So her hair went all over her head and she delivered this, like we hardly heard a thing, but you know, she got her applause and people gave her some feedback and everything else. And 18 months later, she won a competition.
Yeah, that's how it goes. That's how it goes.
The first to the last, it's like, you know, the first thing, and she won a competition. And she's like, that's the story, isn't it? That's how it works.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I wish what would have been great is if you guys filmed that first one and then put it side by side with that last one and just
I think she'd have run out of the room if there was a camera there.
Yeah, I bet.
So Sean, what is it you want of people? I know you've got this Facebook group. I mean, have you got a book out as well? Have you written?
No, but that's on my to-do list.
I'm surprised it isn't because you've got a life story. Yeah. To record, my friend. You know, people will enjoy reading it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something that's on the to-do list. So definitely there'll be a book in the future. But right now, you know, if I had to be completely honest with everybody and say, hey, what is my dream? My personal dream is to coach as many people online to help them through their journey of life. Because what's beautiful about this forum of being online is that you can reach people from all over the world.
Indeed.
And so people can be drawn to you from all different parts of the world because they have this passion that they want to go after, like their big dream, and they want someone to help them to get there. So for me, what I would love to do right now, I'm doing all this completely for free. I'm teaching people, walking them through it. I'm getting the experience. I'm gathering the stories, the success stories of people that I'm helping accomplish their dreams, which eventually I could see all that going into a book as well. Me just telling the stories of all the different people that I've helped. But if like the ultimate dream would be if I could make a really good living just being online and coaching people and helping them, that would then allow me to live anywhere where I'd like to live. And I personally would like to live in Europe. I'd like to, that's where I, you know, lived as a kid. And my wife and I both would love to go back and live in Europe for many years. And I think this could be a really good way for me to do it, is to be able to coach people online, you know, provide online courses, that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of what I'm working towards. But initially, I'm building the audience by just saying, hey, just come. I'll just help you.
So who are the people you are looking for? Who do you want to talk to?
Well, people who have a genuine burning desire to accomplish something great in their life, and they have no idea how to get there. Like someone like, and it doesn't matter at what age you're at. Like, look at myself. I was about to turn 40, and all of a sudden I announced to my friends and family, I'm going to have my own television show, and it's going to be a worldwide hit. I had no idea how I was going to do it, other than, you know, the instinctive formula that I had followed in the past to become a comedian or to become an auctioneer or to become a sales manager or, you know, different things, right? So those are the people I'm looking for, those kindred spirits, those people who are like brave enough to say, okay, I'm going to admit to myself, this is what I want to do. Or they're at least willing to say, okay, I'm willing to brainstorm out and really think about what my big, gigantic life dream is. And it's got to be something big. It's got to be something that, like, you just, otherwise you wouldn't know how to do it. I'm looking for people who sincerely want to go out and just really try to accomplish something that they have no idea how they're going to do it.
So how will people find you if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, so a couple of different ways. If you want to learn a little bit more about me, you can go to the website, which is dothebigdream.com. You'll see pictures of me with other celebrities and filming in the UK and all this stuff. And then there's links to my Facebook group on there. If you are like, hey, I'm already sold by just listening to this guy's story, and I just want to get in on this action, I want to get coached by him for free on Monday nights. It's Monday nights, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But then after I go live, I leave those videos in the group so you can watch it, because everyone in the UK is on a different time zone, obviously.
The link will be on the show notes. That'll be fine.
Yeah, dobigdream.com. That'll take you right to the page.
Are you on other social channels?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I hope everyone follows me on. It's Sean Kelly Comedian. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm also on Twitter. I believe that's also Sean at Sean Kelly Comedy. Hey. And yeah. Thank you.
All right. Well, all those links will be available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. Sean Kelly, thank you so much for being on this journey with me today. It's been such a joy to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, Paul, it's been a real pleasure. And I got to tell you, the next time we get together, I want to flip the script and I want to ask you questions, because I have a feeling that you've led a very fascinating life yourself. And so maybe if we ever get a chance to talk again, I get to come on with my list of questions.
Okay, that's a deal. No problem with
that. Yeah.
Thanks, Sean.
Great meeting you.
All the best.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate it.
And that was Life, Passion, and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Sean Kelly. So if you'd like to catch up with Sean, you can find him at his website, which is dothebigdream.com or thecharityauctioneer.com. You can find him on the Facebook group, which is Do The Big Dream. You can find him on also Facebook itself, called Slice of the Future, and Sean Kelly Comedian. You can find him on Instagram as The Auctioneer Sean Kelly, and on Twitter, Sean Kelly Comedy. All those links will be available at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. Okay, as I mentioned at the beginning, now is the time to discover how to find some more focus in your life and get things done. Okay, so we're all looking to move forward. We all want to find some measure of success in the world. And if you've heard the podcast, you know I have a view of success, but that's another conversation. But the point is, however you look at this, we want to get things done. You might want to get a project over the line. You might have a really big goal that you're looking to move forward on. And the problem is, whenever we start these projects, whenever we do anything like this, there's always some resistance. There's always something that gets in the way. And that can be a multitude of things. But the key to this is, how do we retain focus and stay with the project and push it over the line? And that's where focus coaching can help. Now, it's a process that I discovered some 15 years ago during my coach training. And it's something sometimes called focus coaching, turbo coaching, speed coaching. And it's a really simple process where we define what it is you're trying to achieve. And we look at the resistance that you're experiencing in that achievement, come up with some strategies to solve that resistance, commit to setting a date, and I hold your feet to the fire to make sure that you do that. So there's a commitment, there's an accountability process, and that's it. That's basically how it works. You get it done. And I can tell you, it is so powerful when you start working in this way, particularly when you work with someone who supports you in the process of doing it. And one thing to remember, you know, success is never guaranteed, but the struggle always is. And that's what this coaching is designed to do. It's designed to get you through the struggle towards the success you're looking for. So do check out the link on this podcast or at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. You will find a video of me again explaining this process. But if you go below the video, there's a booking link where we'll have a discussion about your project and how we could get you sorted. As always, if you have enjoyed this podcast, if you found anything here of any use, please share it with a friend, because that's how people like yourself find good podcasts. If you can, give us a review. Give us a 5-star review. I have to ask for 5 stars. Why not? I think I'm worth it. When you support a podcast in that way, you have no idea how effective it is, both in terms of supporting us on the platform, but it also makes us feel good. Yes, it makes me feel good, and I like to feel good. As always, thank you for your time and attention. I will catch you next time.